If you love all things gardening, why not join us at our Spring Fair from the 3rd to the 5th of May at Bewley in Hampshire? You'll find everything you need to kickstart the season. Find out more at bbcgardenersworldfair.com. See you there!
This episode is brought to you by Visit Williamsburg. In Williamsburg, Virginia, there's never too much of a good thing. Whether you're a foodie, a golfer, a history buff, a shopaholic, an outdoor enthusiast, or a thrill seeker, you'll find what you came for here and more. So ask yourself, what is it you want? Discover Williamsburg and plan your trip at visitwilliamsburg.com.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
It takes a lot of hard work to make it look easy. This Mother's Day, Duluth Trading Co. can help you give her something that keeps up. Whether you prefer to shop online or in-store, Duluth has a motherload of gear, goods, and gifts to keep her comfortable and capable, no matter what needs doing. With Duluth's problem-solving details and legendary durability to boot, you'll finally be mom's favorite again. Check out DuluthTrading.com for all your Mother's Day gifting needs.
Hello and welcome to the BBC Gardeners World magazine podcast, brought to you by the team here at the magazine. Join us as we chat all things gardening with the nation's favourite experts. Gardening touches our lives in many different ways. For some, it's a lifelong hobby, a journey started in childhood. While for others, it's a new discovery with the bug only just starting to bite. For my guest today, gardening has had an impact on every area of his life. Hello, I'm Kevin, and I'm chatting to Gardeners World TV presenter, award-winning designer, and magazine contributor Adam Frost. Adam's whole career has been built on gardening, but I'm fascinated to hear how the world of plants and gardens has shaped the person he is today. I started by asking him about his earliest gardening memories.
Actually, mate, it's a photo. So it's a memory the other way around. I can't remember it, but ultimately there's a photograph of me doing it. So I must have been about, I reckon, two and a half, looking at the photograph and thinking about the size my kids were. And I'm literally in the garden with the watering can, Nan and Granddad's, and I'm pottering around watering. And ultimately, you know, that's what Nan said I used to do. Was disappear out the door, pick the watering can up and go around watering things. So that's the earliest memory, mate.
Really young, though. I mean, 2 and a half, that's proper little, isn't it? It really is.
Yeah, yeah. And I mean, there's even a story that, I mean, I don't remember any of this, but obviously my old man was a landscaper and he built early John Brooks gardens at Chelsea. And apparently somewhere, no one can find it now, there's a black and white picture taken, I think it was by the Times or something, of me being pushed around the place in a pushchair. So, yeah, you would say maybe it's ingrained. It's in my blood, as to say.
Well, I was going to say, if you've, you had a dad that was a landscaper and then you just mentioned your nan. Now, you've told me about your nans before.
I mean,
what was it like gardening with those two? They were quite different, if I'm right in thinking.
Yeah, they are, mate. Yeah, you have a... I mean, yeah, I put them in the category of I had Tidy Nan and then I had Scruffy Nan. And Tidy Nan, they lived in a co-op house, you know, so social housing. Granddad was the veg gardener, you know, but Nan was a bit of a control freak. So she even used to tie her brambles up outside her back gate, you know. But all those early scent memories come from their garden. I can envisage it. Smell of cut grass and tomatoes in the greenhouse and, I don't know, following Granddad and dropping the leeks in the ground and my own little marrow bed. Oh, I got really strong memories of that. And my childhood was quite complicated, so I used to spend a lot of time with them, you know. And so I had that as an experience. And then the other end of it was what I called Scruffy Nan. And Scruffy Nan and Grandad, they, or Grandpa, we used to call him, they had quite high-flying jobs. So Nan used to work in Whitehall. My granddad was a gun engineer at the Royal Enfield. But come the weekend, they lived like this slightly sort of bohemian existence, you know, and this really overgrown garden that I sort of equate in my head now to a bit like Heligan. Not that size, but it felt a bit like, you know.
Like a lost garden.
Yeah. But down the end of this garden, there are these two big aluminium greenhouses, which I realised, you know, looking back, they must have had a few quid, because they sort of, and one had coleus in and one had cactus in. And yeah, so that was the sort of the early memories. And Nan's overgrown space, she used to keep all these old Belfast sinks. So I can remember vividly being, you know, covered in everything from newts to frogs to, you know, whatever you could get out of a filled Belfast sink.
But, sounds great. You know, yeah, what a brilliant opportunity for a kid, you know, to be amongst that.
Yeah, it was. And I suppose when you at the time, you're just being a kid, aren't you? You don't really know. But I realise now, and especially because of the way that my life evolved and say my childhood was what it was, even then the garden was either, you know, it was a refuge, it was a place to escape, it was something that I viewed as being safe. And I've got, I suppose they're some of my favourite childhood memories, you know. So, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, you mentioned...
happy times.
You mentioned, a slightly tricky childhood. I mean, what did you know what you wanted to be when you grew up?
Nah, I didn't have a clue, mate. I love sport. I could draw, you know, and that was about as far as it went. I'm sort of, you don't know at the time, but I'm dyslexic, so that was part of the journey. So at school, I was the class clown, really. Probably if you would have said to me back then, what do you want to be? I would have said a footballer. I was lucky enough to play, a decent standard of football. And then after that, I probably got an interest in architecture. So if I was, if I was ever academically bright enough, maybe that's would have been a route. But really, and apart from the football, there wasn't really a lot that was going to go on.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, what made you then turn to gardening? I mean, it's, you know, there's all sorts of stuff going on about at the moment, trying to get people to train to be gardeners, to go into the gardening profession. But, you know, how was that presented as an option to you when you were at school?
Well, it really wasn't. I mean, I had remedial studies type thing, you know. So I think when I was at school in Harlow, we had a rural studies class, and, you know, the not so bright ones, i.e. people like me, were put in the sort of, you know, in those classes. So that was a taste of it. No one ever spoke about it. The old man was a landscaper, but we didn't get on. So that wasn't really the reason to go into it. It was more the fact that I left home at 16 years old. I started looking for jobs. You know, there was a connection there with gardens because of grandparents. I nearly joined the army. I went into Barnstable because I'd moved to Devon by then. I went into Barnstable, I took all the exams. Realistically, I just wanted to escape home. And I think it was only an old sergeant that probably saw that and told me to come back when I was 18 years old. And then an interview came up for North Devon Parks Department. And I thought, as an apprentice, you know, it's something that I always enjoyed. And even though Noel Mann and I didn't get on, I would help him, you know, occasionally and bits and pieces. And, yeah, I suppose I fell into it. It was the wrong thing. You know, there was obviously something there, but no one ever said to me. No one ever said. In fact, actually, my family used to say, don't go into landscape, you know, because you'll never be as good as your old man.
That's quite tough, isn't it?
That was tough, mate. Yeah, it was. Yeah, I look back on it and, yeah. I also look back on it and go, actually, yeah, I was better. So, you know, but that's a bit naughty, isn't it? But, yeah, to be fair, me and my old man sorted out our problems when we become good mates. And he followed years later and said, son, I could have never have done what you've done. So, yeah, we sort of, you get there in the end, don't you? But, yeah, interesting times.
What are your memories of that first job then with the parks department?
I mean, to set the scene, I set the scene because I did share this a couple of years ago. If you remember, right, so I leave home at 16 years old because my mum and dad do a swap with another couple, right? So I'm in a small Devon village and we wake up and the bloke that's going to become my stepdad was married to the woman that's going to become my stepmom. I leave home at 16 years old. I'm not the happiest human being in the world.
I can imagine.
I had a lovely little, tiny little bedsit flat in Coomartin above a pizza shop, got this job. I go for my first day. The first fella they introduced me to was an old boy called Jim. Jim Yo, his name was. Jim must have been, I reckon, 60-odd then. But in his youth, he used to row the lifeboat, all right? So he had arms on him bigger than my legs. So I had Jim, and then my direct sort of charge hand, so above Jim, was an old fella called George. And that was, they were the two fellas really that were my first sort of experience of the grown-up world, you know. And to be fair, I think both of them within a week have pretty much worked me out. Probably worked out that I was, you know, probably had a bit of a chip on my shoulder and a few things that I wasn't happy about, and took me under their wing. And back then, I was just at the end of the old apprenticeship scheme. So they were amazing experiences because we did everything from sports turf. You did obviously all the seafronts, all the old Victorian bedding. So we propagated 200,000 bedding plants, tree work. I don't know, you had to do a bit in the workshop as well. So you looked after machinery. You even had to do a stint up at the graveyard.
Right.
So I had to dig a grave and all that, and which I remind my missus and obviously kids that, you know, I can do that.
Got a very broad skill set, a very, very broad skill set.
Yeah, so if it all goes wrong, you know, I can go grave digging. It was just an incredible experience. And what was lovely was, I suppose like a lot of old parks departments, there was a quite close connection with the bin men as well. So you'd end up having your tea breaks with the bin men. The characters, I think I could write a book on that experience and the capers they got up to and the naughty things they used to do. And yeah.
I mean, it sounds to me like you found the place where you fitted in, actually. Do you know what I mean? For the first time, perhaps.
I think you're right. And it's only as I've got, I don't know, a little bit older and had kids of my own and had those conversations that, yeah, it was, I used to love it. Even then, it didn't feel like work. I'll get like goosebumps really talking to you about it. I'd got up in the morning, you know, I had a little 50cc motorbike, made me lunch, bang. I was there. I was always there early. And yeah, it was just an incredible time.
Yeah.
Really. And they taught me how to duck and dive as well. And, you know, they were real characters and, yeah, special people, I suppose. You know.
I mean, how long were you with them? How long were you with that first parks department? And where did the career go next from that,
yeah,
from that
wow.
point?
So I did the full apprenticeship. Then I stayed for a year. And then realistically, mate, I mean, I got moved from Harlow. So, I mean, Harlow is ultimately in Essex, but that's where I went to school. I loved it, though, I suppose in one sense, you know, it was where they moved off the East End to. But you imagine taking a kid out of Harlow and then dropping him in the middle of North Devon. So I loved the work. I loved the landscape. I learned to surf and sea fish, but I wanted to escape. So I had probably about a year after my full apprenticeship. So what was that, 4 years, something like that. Then I moved back to London and worked for a landscape company. So I had, it was probably about 21, I think, when I left. Yeah, when I left London, I was to move up to where I am now. I was about 21. So probably 4 years and then add another one
right
to that in London. Yeah.
So, I mean, I think you've mentioned it often on the programme, you know, and anyone that is a Gardener's World reader or viewer will know that you did eventually end up working with the, you know, the legendary GW presenter Jeff Hamilton.
I know.
Now, how on earth did that come about?
I saw a little advert in the Horticultural Week, just said landscaper required for television garden in Rutland. I knew who he was because actually there was a connection with my old man. So he actually used to live in Broxbourne, and that's my nan was in my two nans were in Naseyn, and then my old man was obviously brought up in that area, and he at one point worked with Jeff. So I knew who Jeff Hamilton was. Did I watch Gardener's World on a Friday night? No, probably not, mate. So I was at the pub. So I went for this interview knowing who he was, but I probably didn't comprehend quite how big a deal it was, you know, which was probably good because I'm not sure that I would have actually been able to string a sentence together, you know. And so, yeah, I was lucky enough to get the interview. And maybe that was, you know, because when we went, he obviously recognised the name with the old man and whatever and asked how the old man was. I mean, Jeff said to me, you know, later, it might have got you a half a chance at interview, but it definitely wouldn't have got you a job, you know. So I went for the interview, went back into Stamford, this beautiful old market town. And I loved the place then. And I obviously had this amazing 2 hours with Jeff. He's showing me around, introduced me to his son, Nick. And I don't know, did I ever think I'd get a job like that? No. Then went back down to London. And about a week later, the phone rings and it was Jeff Hamilton. And he said, Adam, you know, thanks for coming up. You did really well with the interview. He said, but there's someone slightly more qualified with you than you, and we'd like to offer him the job. I said, all right, well, you know, but we'd like to keep your name on record, you know. So I was, thank you, Jeff, you know, thank you for your time, blah, blah, blah. Put the phone down. Girlfriend said, who was that? I said, Jeff Hamilton. Did you get the job? Did you get? No. I said, I'll have to start looking again. You know? So anyway, we carry on looking. 2 weeks later, the phone rings again. And it was Jeff Hamilton. And he said, Adam, he said, it's, you know, have you found a job? I said, no, Jeff. He said, well, it's not really worked out with the other fellow. He, you know, he felt he was a bit overqualified for the role. And, you know, so we'd like to offer you the job. And I said, well, if it's all right with you, I'll get back to you. anyway, I know it sounds terrible, doesn't it? And then I put the phone down. Girlfriend said, who was it? And I said, oh, it was Jeff Hamilton. What's he want? I said, well, he's offered me the job. She said, what did you say? I said, well, I don't know. He said, I ain't playing second fiddle to no one. And then she phoned my mum, and then my mum phoned me, and then I phoned Jeff back and said, yeah, I'd love to take the job. That's shocking, mate, isn't it? You know, I was 21 years old is my only sort of defence. Yeah. And at least people know I'm honest, you know. And I look now, I've got, you know, two of my kids are older than that. I'd have killed them.
Yeah. I know. Well, it's amazing what life does to you and the perspective that, you know, it all brings, isn't it, really? I mean, you how could you have possibly known what Jeff would become and the legacy that he'd leave behind at that age? You know, you maybe would never not have known.
No. And then I went and, wow, you know, I had the experience of obviously George and Jim and them putting the arm around me, but to see a male figure, you know, and at the end of the day, I, you know, there wasn't lots of people that I looked up to be around someone like that, that ultimately we look back on, you know, with what we look back on now, a man so ahead of his time, you know, you talk about Pete Free, you talk about organic gardening, you know, stop ruining our countryside, ripping up limestone pavements. You know, he was talking about that 30 years ago. We're still having those conversations, pal. You know, which that scares me a little bit. And I know you and I were talking about, you know, the sort of magazine being that old, you know, and how didn't realise that I'd been working with him back then and I was involved in the first magazines. But you know, to think what he was doing, and I think that rubs off, doesn't it, when you're in your early 20s? And
yeah, I mean, it must have impacted the whole way you garden today, you know, and everything that you know, you stand for and, you know, your principles and everything, you know, he must have had a tremendous impact.
Yeah, definitely. And I sort of have this, I realise now, again, I don't think I knew at the time, he set like a sort of a bit of a moral gardening compass, you know, and that I react to. And I suppose I knew what he taught me as the starting point for where I go with it. And yeah, but I think that man must have done that to so many people. I can remember when he passed away, and I was at a barbecue with a load of football mates at a weekend, and someone said, "Frosty, you best come in and check the CFAX." You know, I remember the CFAX boy. Can remember that?
Yeah, booking holidays, yeah. Mostly. That's what it was. Yeah.
I know. And anyway, on the CFAX, it was said that, you know, he'd had a heart attack and passed away. And I can remember just sitting there thinking, "Wow, what?" You know, and then the tears come, and then after that, watching the next sort of, I don't know, few months of people sort of outpouring of grief for a man that, in a sense, a lot of them didn't even meet, but they felt that on a Friday night, this man really connected with them, and that's some ability, you know, and that, I don't know, that's just a sort of a, makes you realise, I suppose, how special he was, really.
Yeah, no, completely. I mean, you know, we get, our post bag is often full of references to Jeff still. You know, at the magazine, we still people talk about him a great deal. I mean, I wondered, what was the job like? What was it, I mean, working at a television guard and all those years ago? I mean, of course, you've sort of come 360 now, which, of course, we'll come on to. But back then, what was the job like?
Brilliant. I was his landscape to start with. So I don't know. I used to build things for books, magazines. Then, I mean, Jeff, obviously Nick had, his son had the nursery. And then there was a space of land between the sort of the nursery and the television garden. So the television garden was evolving. So I would build any projects that were going to be on telly. Then there was the bit of land that we've started to build extra things. So eventually it could open as a little public garden. So, yeah, I did that to start with, really. Did most of the sort of building work for Jeff and used to make things, create things. He'd come out on a, you know, something scribbled on the back of an old fag packet. Say, "Boy, can you build that? Look at it." Even if I couldn't, I'd say, "Yeah, Jeff, no worries, I'll do that." And then slowly, you know, was given more responsibility to the point that, he started, the designers would turn up. And I suppose I was probably at a little bit of a point of, don't get me wrong, I love building gardens and I love getting my hands in the soil. But again, you look back, don't you? And I realised I was probably reasonably ambitious and wanted to keep pushing on and challenge myself. And these people called garden designers used to turn up and just think, well, hold on a minute, this is all a bit interesting. And didn't think it was something necessarily you could make a living out of. And I asked Jeff if maybe that was something that I could get involved in doing, you know. And he said, let me make some phone calls, boy. Let me make some phone calls. And he went and he phoned three people, one being John Brooks, one being David Stevens, and the other being Robin Williams, who all had gardening schools or, you know, design schools. And came down and said, "You can go and have 12 months with any of these." You know, and but he said, I think you should go and spend time with David Stevens, he said. He said, "The man understands space." Not great with plants, he said, but he understands space. David and I joke about it now. So that's what I did, mate. And I'd went and did that, and I was still at Barnsdale working as well. So really, come the end, the Paradise series, which was the last series that Jeff did, I designed those two.
Right. I didn't know that, actually. That's fascinating.
Yeah, and then Gardeners World Live, we did a reclaimed garden, and that was being rebuilt at Barnsdale Gardens just after, we hadn't been finished when Jeff passed away. So, yeah, and it's interesting, isn't it, because you look back and think, wow, and again, I think I was just doing it at the time. You know, the man trusted me enough to let me create something and put his name to it.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, how did it progress from something that you were doing for Jeff at Barnsdale to actually becoming a really, really significant part of your career?
I think, obviously, he passed away in 96. That was obviously in the August. My first kid was during December. My job went with Jeff, really. So I helped Nick get the gardens ready to open. And then actually one of the first people to ring me was David Stevens and said, what are you going to do? I said, I don't know. I'd love to design, but I can't see that, me making a living out of that. I mean, maybe I've knocked a few edges off, but to describe me as rough around the edges would have probably been a slight understatement. But David said, well, why don't you come and do, you know, a bit with me, a bit of associate stuff, and, you know, you set yourself up and do a bit of landscape and see how it goes. So I set up a little design and build was how I sort of, but it really concentrated, I suppose, making its living on landscaping. And I did David's work, and then we just started to evolve that business. And I took that, I suppose, to employing, well, I think by about 2005, I was employing about 20 people.
Right. Okay.
And at that point, the design side was, you know, starting to really develop. And it was hard work. I was trying to sort of manage, you know, a group of lads. Ultimately, most of them, you know, were young lads. We were working all over the country. We were building gardens for like lots of the top designers. And then in the afternoon, I was trying to design gardens, and the two didn't quite equate, you know. So I was trying to sort of start to get out of the landscape business. And then David had sort of contacted me and said, we're off to Chelsea. And I think that was that year, the 2004 going into 2005, was the year where it really just went on to a different level. So though I designed, David organised that we were off to London to meet Terence Conran. And Terence was doing a garden for the Imperial War Museum. Okay. And David was doing the planting, and I was building it.
Right.
And I went down, and we went down with David to meet Terence Conran. And we went into this room, and Terence walked in with a blue suit, pale blue shirt, and the old cigar on. And I just sat there quietly, slightly in awe of a man that, you know, in a design world, I mean, he's passed away, hasn't he, in recent years, but a man that had sort of brought design to the masses, I suppose. And we had this sort of conversation, and, well, David and, realistically, Terence and David had a conversation. I sat there like a muppet. And then Terence sort of asked what my involvement was going to be, and I just blurted out, I'm going to build it. And I think he must have mumbled something about you better be good. And then we had 12 months of working on this design and creating it. And we went to Chelsea, we built it. And I think one of the proudest things I've got is a letter from Conran talking about my craft and my ability. And it was a conversation with Terence on press day. And Mrs. Frost had rocked up, and she was sat with Vera Lynn. This is how bizarre it was. All right, so Catherine Jenkins and Vera Lynn had just sung on the Chelsea Pensioners' Garden next door. Selena was sat down. So Mrs. Frost sat down. Vera Lynn came and sat next to her. Mrs. Frost is having a conversation with Vera Lynn. Bear in mind that Mrs. Frost didn't know it was Vera Lynn.
Brilliant.
And you know my wife really well, so you can imagine I rib her massively about that. And then Terence and I were listening to it, and then he just started this conversation and said, what are you going to do, young man? What are you going to do? He said, because there's no way you're just going to carry on building. And I said, Terence, we're still on Main Avenue. I said, I'd love to do this, but who's going to employ me to, you know, build a garden on Main Avenue? And he stopped me in my tracks and more or less ripped into me, really, and just explained to me that Habitat was only ever created because the department stores wouldn't sell his furniture. And he used to make his furniture in the daytime and used to run something called soup kitchens in the evening. And if I wanted to do something, I should go and make sure that I did it. And that year as well, we were building the National Rose Garden at St. Albans. And that had an 18 grand retention on it. And right. I somehow So for people, I suppose, that don't know, that £18,000 retention is that they keep back £18,000 for 12 months just to make sure the job doesn't fall apart. And we had this money coming, and I somehow convinced Mrs. Frost to spend the £18,000 on a Chelsea garden. And
that must have been quite some convincing job, I'd have thought.
It was some conversation, mate. And again, you look back, don't you, on things, and we didn't have money. We didn't have any money. The company turned over a lot of money, but it didn't make a lot of money. We had debts. We laugh about it now. If she'd have been sensible and just said, you know, this is daft, what you're doing, you know. But she didn't. She just said, when she eventually started talking to me again, obviously, but, you know, she said, go and do it. And we did, mate. We went to Chelsea and then we won a medal. And not that that changed anything, really. It just gave me a hunger that, actually, no, it's design. It's design is where I want to be. And then the whole thing just teamed up. So the following year, we went back, we built one for someone else, and then the profit out of the one we built paid for me to do my own small one again. And I built a little front garden that was quite sort of at the time. And then that won a gold and best in show. And then we started to get a little bit of interest from sponsors. And I managed to then more or less come out of, it was 2010, I came out of the landscape business altogether, I think.
Right. I mean, I find it this fascinating. I mean, I've been to Chelsea. It's amazing. You know, a crazy, crazy place in good and bad ways. On the one hand, you say you've got Mrs. Frost talking to Dame Vera Lynn and all of that magic and sparkle that goes with that. But, I mean, what's it like doing a Main Avenue show garden at the, you know, the most famous flower show in the world?
It hurts. It hurts. Yeah. Physically, mentally. It's amazing, mate. There's no other way to describe it, really. It tries you in every single department. Obviously, as a designer, you're putting yourself up there with, you know, with some of the best designers in the world and people that you, especially when I first started, people that I admire and looked up to and were way beyond anything I thought I could achieve. Just the pure physical side of going there for 20 days from 7 o'clock in the morning till 9 o'clock at night, creating it, the worry of the plants, you know, the sort of timing, all of it it's an incredible challenge, but it's addictive. But also, I think as well, for me, what it was the actual doing. So, because I played a decent standard of football, I got that, and I stopped playing because work took over. It gave me that same fix that being with a group of people determined to achieve something for a period of time. And I think that's the bit that I miss. I haven't been since, 2015. Well, I haven't been and done one, but I get to go and mess about, mate, now, and a bit like you know, that sort of media side of things. But yeah, addictive and painful, if I had to pick two words.
Okay. But, yeah, that probably sums it up pretty well, I'd imagine, to be honest. Obviously people that are going to be listening now know you as a presenter of Gardener's World. You know, you write for me, for the magazine as well. You know, you're a Gardener's World face and personality now. I mean, what's it like presenting
I don't even like the word personality, you know what?
I think you are one.
I know. My kids take the mickey out of me and it's, you know, I don't know. It was never part of the master plan. It was never, I go back to the Jeff thing and this man used to, obviously, you know, it was his own words. So he would go away, you'd hear him talking out loud. He'd come to the camera and he'd go bang, you know, and then X million people would go, oh, wow. Oh my God, this man's amazing, you know. And I used to watch him in complete awe and think, how would anybody ever be able to do that? slowly over the years, because I suppose that I was never short of an opinion and I did quite a lot in the industry, and people would always say to me, you should do something on telly. You know, you've got something, you've got whatever. And I'd always go, yeah, whatever. And then I'd sort of get a little bit involved and someone would convince me to go and do a couple of interviews, or, you know, Alan might say, Mr. T might say, come and do a bit on my show. And then I'd go to Chelsea and I'd be doing interviews, and then, you know, crew members that would be filming me would say, oh, you'd be a good presenter. You'd be, and Mrs. Frost obviously would push massively from behind and say, go on. And then I did a bit more public speaking. And so I think it just evolved, and to the point where I was at Chelsea. I was doing my last Chelsea's, and there was a few conversations going on about, come on, come and do a bit of presenting for us. And I did a few bits and pieces. And then I did a film at home, and we did a two-parter. We went off, found some inspiration, and then my old house, and I built a gravel garden. And unbeknown to me, that got sent in to the Royal Television Awards for Best Newcomer. And I mean, even that was like bizarre. At the same time, I'd been talked into by Knowlesy, by Nick Knowles. I got to know Knowlesy through the RHS. We were both asked to be ambassadors. And we'd ended up in Liverpool for a weekend together, doing something, and Knowlesy did what he did, and, you know, he talks a lot, doesn't do a lot, you know, and I did all the doing. And he'd convinced me to go to Manchester to look at this project he was involved in, and that evolved into being a DIY SOS when we were trying to build a street, and he convinced me that it would be a good idea that I did the gardens to go with this for the veterans. So I'd done that as well. And I'd done these two bits. And this night at these RTS Awards, these both things were up for an award. So Mrs. Frost and I go off to Bristol, suited and booted, and we go into the theatre, and people are starting to sort of saying, you know, you've got half a chance of winning this, Frosty boy. Have you written a few words? And I'm going, well, no, because, I'm not going to win this. Anyway, we sit down and you got people coming up saying, oh, I've done television for 30 years. This is the first thing I've won. And so I'm going to Mrs. Frost. See, you know, you're nothing to worry about. And then they get to my bit and they play the biggest clips, that you see the biggest version of you up on his screens. And the sort of master of ceremonies said, they felt that this fella's, and one of the people was in it was a girl from Countryfile, and I thought she'd win it hands down, you know. And the moment he said fella, I thought, oh wow, that's not a girl from Countryfile, you know. And then he said, and there was only three of us, and then he said down to earth, and I'm thinking the other one wasn't very down to earth. And so I'm just sitting in my chair sinking. Mrs. Frost has wet herself, I think, by this point. And then they've said Adam Frost, and I can just, you know, sometimes when something happens and everything seems to slow down.
Yeah.
And at this point, everything around me seems slow, but internally it all feels like it's all about to blow up. And I get up and I'm thinking, I haven't got any words to say. And I walk into this stage and they say, congratulations. And the first thing I can blurt out is, well, thank you very much. I'll be really honest with you. 3 weeks ago, I didn't know what the RTS awards were. and then managed to compose myself, say something to Knowlesy because he's in the audience about taking me to Manchester to try and ruin my career, and thank the Gardener's World, and sit, go out the back, take me photograph. And then by the time I come back in, the DIY SOS, the Manchester Veterans, is up for an award. Knowlesy grabs me by the scruff of neck. That wins. I'm back on the stage. I've got another award. Two in one night. Yeah. So and then I think that was probably the catalyst of maybe them going, no, we're going to use you more.
So I'm just thinking, coming away from the bright lights of awards ceremonies and television cameras, you know, at the heart of it, you're a gardener. still. What have your, you know, what role have your own personal gardens played in your life as you've, you know, you've had your family, your kids have grown up, you know, what role have your own gardens played?
Massive, I suppose. It's always been something that in a way life's evolved around. I did it for a living. I don't know. I drive them all nuts. You know, I can be sat on a beach somewhere and I've got a notepad and I'm scribbling something and it might be an idea. And I don't know, I could be out for a romantic meal and I've got an idea in my head and it's, you know, obviously it doesn't always go down that well. So life's evolved around. I mean, it's interesting because if you asked my wonderful wife, she would say that's what I am. I suppose I'm not, but that's what she would say, is that you are more, it's more than a job, you know. So for me, even when things get tough, and I mean the last 12 months, or the, you know, 18 months, prime example, I want to have my hands in the soil, you know. And I realise, I look back now, they're safe places for me because of my sort of upbringing. And so, yeah, maybe life's built around the garden. I'm always talking about, you know, I mean, at the moment, I just want to get outside and I want to get the barbecues and I want to do this and I want the family out around me. And, yeah, so, and I don't know, maybe that's what comes across when I'm in front of a camera, you know, is that I'm just talking about something that I love and somebody just happens to be filming me doing it, really. Because that's blown me away, is that I'm just a lad that likes gardening that gets to talk about it on the telly. It doesn't make me any different to anyone else. And that seems to have connected somehow with a lot of people. And that's blown me away, is the reaction that I've had from a lot of the public. And
well, gardeners are
humbling.
Gardeners are lovely people, aren't they?
Yeah,
you know,
they are.
We're actually a nice bunch. Yeah. So
yeah, you know, if you're not a very nice person in the gardening world, you tend to stand out.
Yeah. Oh no, I couldn't agree more. Now, you know, we all get to see your garden, you know, often on a Friday evening, and you know, I've visited and been lucky enough to see it. It's a really really lovely space. But I mean, how's it coming along? I know you've not been there for years and years, so it's relatively new still in terms of a garden. And you know, are you pleased with it? What annoys you about it? We all have our frustrations.
Yeah, we do. And it's just, I mean, for me, that garden's one big experiment. So it's partly me looking as to how I would maintain a garden, i.e. backing off a little bit, not cutting the grass as much, trying to look at wildflower on a daily basis rather than doing it, you know, for clients, you know, experimenting with plants, atmospheres, looking how I can encapsulate something, improve something, looking how to sort of deal with light, you know, where it comes up, where it goes down, all that. So in a weird way, it's just one big experiment. So I'm constantly out there tinkering, messing about, digging things up, moving them. And it's like all of us, really, you know, some things go right, some things don't go right. It took me about 2 years to get my head around the microclimates in the garden, you know, the cool places, the wet places, the sort of warmer places. It's interesting because Abby, my oldest daughter, is still at home and she's the early bird with me, but she loves her horses. So she's out doing her horses. And even like this winter's felt probably like for a lot of people, it felt like the longest winter in history, you know, and both of us in the mornings, now the light's just starting to pick up just a little bit. We both want to just get outside. And I realised that little fix of me walking around with that cup of tea in the morning sets my whole day up. I just ingrained. And then the garden probably was the last year was the first year I was thinking, I'm getting somewhere. And that garden's got a lifetime of work in it, really, mate. But it'll be interesting to see how long we stay, I think. That's, and you know, because I there'll be a point when, you know, I think that, you know, the kids are sort of, we, the house is too big. It wasn't, we never went there for the house, which is bananas. I know, and it's lovely. But as the kids start to move away, it will feel too big. And so it will be, you know, that cat's little stuff of what do we do next? And I don't know, I think there's a final garden in me somewhere as well, if that makes sense.
Yeah. No, it does. It does. Well, as long as you're there where you are at the moment, I'm hoping that we'll be still coming and photographing with you and, you know, catching up with what you're doing. Okay. Now, I'm thinking back to, you know, your chaps at the parks department and, you know, that obviously that very special part of your life and the start of your career. But if you think back to that lad that you were then, what on earth do you think he'd make of where you are now? Did you ever imagine that this is where you'd be?
No. More chance of being locked up, mate. Being honest. Even my mates that have known me, you know, all that time, even lads that I played football when I first moved up here as a 21-year-old, and I bump into them, you know, and they go, Frosty, like, we know you loved what you did and you loved your job, but never thought that you would be doing what you were doing. Don't get me wrong, mate. I'll do what I do, but then I can walk on a stage. I can do that. I can do the camera thing. But actually, then I'll quite happily go and sit in the corner quietly. It's a bit weird. It's weird that I can do it, if that makes sense, because it's out of character in so many ways. But yeah, if you'd have said to me at 16 years old, don't worry, boy. I know you've left home at 16 and, you know, and you're not very happy. But, you know, by the time you get to your sort of mid-40s, it'll all start to level out and you'll be fine. I'd have said you were totally and utterly off your rocker. And I don't know, maybe that, you know, is something I go into, you know, for the RHS and things like that, going to talk to youngsters. And half of it's not because I've ended up, you know, on the telly or this, that, and the other. Half the conversation is that I'll say to people is, go and find something that you love. Go and find something that you love and then convince somebody to pay you to do it. And then if you're doing something that you love, everything else, I think, will fall into place.
Yeah.
You know, and maybe I've got that out of it, is that message of that maybe all of us should be doing a little bit more. And I know we can't all for various different reasons, but we should follow our heart a lot more than we do.
Yeah.
You know, and
yeah.
And I've just been lucky enough to be able to do that, I suppose.
What would you say to anyone that's thinking of going into a career of gardening in some way or another, either as a youngster like you were or as a career change option, you know? It's popular.
Yeah, do it. And I do think as well, after, you know, what we've all been through, you know, the sort of last year or so, that there will be people that have connected with it, people that have realised that ultimately they've got something out of it. Maybe they've worked out what they've got out of it, or they're in a change, you know, period of life where they can change what they're doing. What's wonderful about it, and I think if I had to sell it, I would say, first of all, we're terrible in horticulture. We apologise for the amount of money we pay. So we never big it up. You know, we're always going, you know, well, it'll be lovely, but you won't earn much money. Well, actually, that's not technically right. Yeah, there's certain parts of it you don't earn big wages, but actually the actual what we do is so diverse, all right? You and I are both in the same industry, all right? So if we look at putting our hands in the soil, right up to design, we look at the sciences, we look, is there an industry that can take you in the directions that horticulture can take you? I don't think there is. I've racked my brains as to, so you can start off somewhere and then that can evolve. That could evolve into media. That could evolve into retail. That could evolve into maintenance. That can evolve into landscape, to design. You know, you can become a botanist. It's mind-blowing. And the biggest thing on top of all that you will not stop learning. You will not stop learning. You know, I'm going to go in a hole in the ground, probably dug by myself, not knowing I don't know, knowing half of what I want to know. And to be able to get out of bed every day and have that as your opportunity, then that's got to be a good thing. You know, all of us, it feels like work sometimes, but really, you know, I think physically, mentally, for all of us, you just say, go and do it. Go and do it. Have a go. You know, chuck the kitchen sink at it.
Thanks for listening to the BBC Gardeners World Magazine podcast. And for more gardening tips and inspiration, why not try our new magazine subscription offer for podcast listeners at buysubscriptions.com/GWPod. If you subscribe before the 21st of April, you'll get our May issue and a year's 2-for-1 gardens guide and entry card. You'll also find this special offer in our podcast page on gardenersworld.com, where we share more about today's themes. So, if you've enjoyed this episode, please tell others about it and rate us in your podcast provider app. And we'll see you next time.